Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hey everyone, before we get started today, we wanted to alert you to our two upcoming online events. On Sunday, March 5th at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. East Coast time, Kristen and I will be broadcasting via the online concert platform Stage It, performing all 12 songs from Season 1, as well as a handful of songs from Season 2. If you've never used Stage It, let me tell you, it is a hoot! You will be able to see and hear us, and you'll be able to ask us questions and talk to each other via an embedded chat screen. Tickets are $5, and you can grab one at stageit.com/bufferingcast.
Also, on March 10th, many of you probably know what March 10th is, but if you don't, it is the 20th anniversary of the first episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer airing here in the United States on the WB. And so we are in quite a festive mood about it, and we are going to be doing a free live streaming Buffy watch of Season 1, Episode 1, Welcome to the Hellmouth at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, that's 5 p.m. Pacific Time, on facebook.com/bufferingcast. We're going to watch through the episode. The way that it works is you have your DVD or your Hulu or your Netflix or however you watch Buffy. We all queue up together. You hit play on your end. We hit play on our end. You hear some of our commentary. We all chat together. It is very, very fun, and it is going to be a wonderful way to celebrate 20 years.
Hooray!
Can you even believe it? 20 years! So we will see you, hopefully, on March 5th and March 10th, and if not, we'll see you sometime soon.
Yeah! God, hello and welcome to Buffering the Vampire Slayer, a podcast where we are watching and discussing every episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer one at a time. I am Jenny Owen Youngs.
And I'm Kristen Russo, and this week we're talking about Season 2, Episode 7, Lie to Me. Stay tuned at the end of this podcast every week for an original song written by us recapping the Buffy episode we are discussing.
Lie to Me was written and directed by Joss Whedon, a guy we've heard of, and originally aired on November 3rd, 1997.
And this is the one where Buffy is lured into a trap by a group of undead wannabes who hope that Spike will make them vampires in exchange for giving him the Slayer.
Wow.
You like the IMDb?
They did a great job.
IMDb rocks it out with their summaries.
I would have said, this is the one where Angel gets jealous, Willow can't lie, Ford is stupid, and Buffy is great.
There's the episode. We can just, that's the, ow.
Yeah,
ow. Just kidding.
Wow. What a great episode.
Yeah, this is a phenomenal episode. I have a lot that I want to talk about, and I know you do too.
Yes, let's just jump
right in to the opening shot.
Playground.
What do you call that thing?
Ooh, it's not a merry-go-round.
That's what I called it, a merry-go-round
right.
thing at the park where you spin around and you use your feet and you spin and then you hop on and you spin. It's a great playground pastime.
If you know the name of this playground staple, please tweet it at us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
At BufferingCast. That's like 722 mentions. Everybody has the name for it. It's more fun than Google, you know?
Yeah.
Anyhow, this opening scene, I screamed, you know, if you listen to this to our series, how much I am obsessed with Wes Craven. And this playground tool is in many a Wes Craven Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
That's where the little creepy children sit and
yes.
they sing, one, two, Freddy's yes. coming for
Is
you.
Is there anything creepier than a swing swinging slightly at a nighttime empty playground?
You know, I think a couple of things. But
it's up there, right?
It's up there.
It ranks.
So the other day, I took a shower. I do that sometimes.
Oh, fuck.
I know. I have to keep telling people now. This happened to me and I didn't tell Jenny about it until that night. It happened to me in the morning. I was taking a shower and our bathroom is set up where it's like a stand-up shower, like little square situation. And then directly next to it is a bathtub. It's so pointless because you can either like take a bath and use all of the space or you can take a shower and be stuck in a little box. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, I was taking a shower. I turned the water off. And when I turned the water off in the shower, I heard water still running. And so I was like, oh, God, is there like a leak? It sounded like, you know, if there's a huge leak in your house, like the toilet is leaking to the floor below or something. And I was like, oh, God, what is that noise? And I looked and the bathtub faucet had been turned on and the water was running. And I like, this is like a true testament to the power of the human brain, because I was like, I must have knocked that on with my body accidentally and learned very quickly when I said it out loud to Jenny that no, it's terrifying. I don't know what happened. So that ranks up there with an empty swinging, I think.
Yeah.
Also, faucets turning on by themselves.
Yeah. The chair that you're sitting in right now.
Come on. What?
Okay.
What about it?
Nothing.
What? Oh, the ghost that's in the studio?
Yes, yes.
Go ahead, tell them.
Well, some friends
of
ours.
You start by being like, the chair you're sitting in right now.
You could be sharing space with a ghost right now.
Well, I would be happy to share space with a ghost as long as it's a nice ghost.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So friends of ours stayed in our place while we were out of town. And after they left, they got in touch with us and they were like, do you have a ghost? And we were like, fucking not that we know of. Why are you bringing it up? And they were like, well, every time we walk past the door to your studio, we could see a shape in the chair that Kristen's sitting in right now.
No big deal. Okay, I think you've established your point, Jennifer.
So we live in a haunted-ass house, I
guess? I wouldn't classify it as haunted, but I think there's
some. You're going to say I wouldn't classify it as haunted-ass.
I mean, there's something going on, but there's like, let's be real, there's something going on in everybody's house a little bit.
Now I'm like going through my mind files of all the times you're going to be out of town in the next 6 months and I'm going to be here alone.
Yeah. And the ghost is going to be like, hey, remember that chair you were sitting in, and make you feel scary.
No.
Anyway, we get past this scene in the playground with the spinny thing. And now we meet this child, unnamed child who has one of my favorite moments in the entire episode, because I think it's the first line we hear, which is, come on, mom, she's always late. And it's like, thank you for the exposition. Like, we've established what is happening via this child's line. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, this child is alone.
And then from the gloom emerges,
as always,
a pure white lamb. Actually, speaking of lambs, I guess this is why I have the image, because I wrote down the lyric of the song that her mother used to sing her. Run and catch, the lamb is caught in the blackberry patch.
Ah! Yeah, and then she follows her, like, rendition by saying, she had the sweetest voice. Like, I think either you're singing it differently or you misremember Drew.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So good.
But yeah, so Drew is just creepy as all get out.
And getting closer and closer to the kid. He's like, I'm not supposed to talk to people. She's like, I'm not a person. Yes.
Yeah, I'm not a person. And then she's like, I wonder what your mother will think when she finds your body. Come on.
And then Angel, who we still continue to wonder, can he fly?
Right.
Inserts himself at light speed
between
Drusilla and this kid. And he's like, run home now. who's scarier in this scene? To the kid, do
you think?
To
the kid?
Probably Angel.
Drusilla.
Really?
I would remember.
She seems unhinged, but Angel seems like.
I mean, Angel is definitely like, I mean, the kid listens, so the kid is scared to the point of running from Angel, but I think it's more of like a powerful fear than like a haunting you for the rest of your life and your nightmares kind of a fear, which is what Drusilla
presents here. Right, right, right.
And then I have to give, I mean, and I'm sure I'm going to do this so many times, but Juliet Landau, are you kidding me? This scene between her and Angel. Between Juliet Landau and Angel. but this scene between them is incredible. The way that she, like, angles her head up towards his face while she talks to him. And then please go back and rewatch when she walks away.
Oh my God. The look while she's walking away.
It's unbelievable. Like, I can't imagine, you know, a lot of times you're like, oh, well, you know, what a great decision on the director's part to, like, you know, say, oh, do this way and it'll probably be effective or what have you. And you know, that there's this equal shared space between like an actor and the director and how it comes together. I just don't believe that this had much to do with the direction. It just seems to like emanate from her being.
Yeah,
even if somebody said like walk away creepily, like I would never wind up being able to do what Drusilla does, Juliette Landau does in this moment.
I think what makes her extra creepy is that she's rarely deliberately menacing.
Right.
There's always this just sort of like detached, kind of unhinged.
She's just telling
slow
it like it
creep.
Is.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Very matter of fact within her own universe.
Yeah. Oh, I love her. And I know this is early, but I think that Drusilla earned this early. Can we hear the Drusilla jingle?
Here it is.
Drusilla, you fill my heart with dread, and still I'm led right back to you.
Okay, so that was the Drusilla jingle, and just in case you're wondering, if you're an iPhone user, that ringtone is now live. You can go into the iTunes store on your phone and find the Drusilla jingle.
Yeah.
We're very excited about it.
So good.
Our growing catalog of ringtone jingles.
Also, shout out someone. We retweeted someone within the last couple of weeks who tweeted at us about Drusilla and used the most remarkable emoji combination to describe Drusilla. It was like a bat, a dead rose, the witchy globe, I think the coffin, and one other thing. It was
the
like,
dark side of the moon, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. It was just like unbelievable. So shout out to you, human being.
Way to go.
Way to go. Nailed it. Totally nailed it. Last thing before we get to the credits is, at first when I watched this opening, I was like, how long has this kid been waiting for his mother?
It's like, it is so dark.
It's so dark. But then later on in the episode, we learned that sunset is at 6:27 now. So, you know, after school programming.
Late. Yeah. Sure, sure.
I gave the mom a little bit more of a pass than I did in the initial viewing.
The two things that I want to say before we go past the credits is Buffy sees this happening.
Yes.
Buffy sees Angel and Drusilla engaged,
mm-hmm.
and they're very close, and especially with her like head tilting, it looks like maybe they could be kissing or something.
Right.
Okay, and also
Drusilla kind of always looks like she could be kissing the person she's talking
that's true,
right?
And also the way that Angel says hello Drusilla,
mm-hmm.
it's like very formal and like very guilty.
Mm-hmm.
As someone who really like gets guilt, That just rang out to me. I was like, yes, I know where you are.
Yeah, you have a lot of overlap with Angel's ability to feel guilty. And as we'll talk about in a little while, I noticed a parallel between you and Giles in this episode.
What a delight. Hooray.
So Buffy sees this, setting the tone for this episode, which really orbits around lies.
Right.
And the complicated nature of lies,
mm-hmm.
That they're not black and white things, that they're not always bad and they're not always good, and they're usually somewhere in between.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But before we start digging into that, can we talk about Jenny Calendar and Giles?
Yes.
So Jenny Calendar gets a sweet, sweet burn in here in the opening moments of the episode where, you know, Giles is so upset that Jenny is not telling him what they're going to do on their date. And just sidebar here, they're very openly like
planning dates in school.
Yeah, just like, because I went to high school where two of the teachers were starting to date.
And my God, me too.
It was like the hot gossip.
Yes.
Everybody was like,
did secret.
You think that they're dating?
Wait, were they, was one of them getting a divorce though?
Ooh, I don't know. Maybe.
Because that was definitely
actually
the situation
maybe.
At my school,
yeah.
Which made it hotter goss.
Yeah. Actually, I think you might be right. But regardless, it was like, you know, we were like watching their every move. Like,
yeah.
We, you know, if like if he would come into her classroom, everybody would be like, you know. So like, I feel like
kids are such assholes.
Yeah. So I just feel like seeing them, you know, seeing Jenny Callender and Giles operate in the hallways, it just seems like the students don't care, and I beg to differ with that assessment.
Yeah, beg to diff.
Students super care when teachers date each other.
Uh-huh.
Anyhow, Giles is upset because Jenny won't tell him where they're going on their secret date. And he's like, how am I supposed to know what to wear? And Jenny says, do you own anything else?
Just so, all tweed all the time
for Giles.
I'm picturing him going swimming, going to the beach, you know, in like, well, I guess when I was trying to think about like tweed swim trunks, but I feel like he just wears one of those like one piece black and white striped sort of like
Jenny,
if you picture a strong man. What?
I don't mean to take you off course here, but Giles does not go to the beach.
Oh yeah,
come on.
No, but like, what if he has to research?
Giles, literally, he would go in his tweed suit
with a parasol.
With a parasol, yes, and his fucking green mug, which we still haven't seen, but one day we will.
One day.
I can't wait. Oh, my God. I don't even know when the first appearance is. It's going to take us by surprise. I'm going to scream. I'm going to scream so loud when I see it for the first time. Anyhow, so this, you know, fun moment between Jenny Callender and Giles passes, and we cut to class. There's so much going on in this classroom.
Oh, my God.
Willow and Buffy are passing notes to each other. Your standard high school, you know, fodder here, passing notes, except for their notes are like, was she pretty? Vampire? Question mark, which is hysterical.
Yeah.
And Cordelia and Xander are sitting across from each other. Xander is wearing this, like, incredible red, shiny Adidas with the stripes down the side.
I'm glad that you brought this up.
I am glad that
because
I brought it up,
because he's also wearing Salvation Army, like, plaid old man pants.
Uh-huh.
And I just wanted to say that I absolutely 100% owned and wore a variation of that outfit.
That combination together.
What? Yeah, what a great idea. Let me just wear this shiny Adidas jersey with these old, like, herringbone fucking
hey, we were
grandpa pants.
We were reinventing the wheel, Jenny.
Right, yeah, that's what we were doing.
We were making a name for ourselves, and it was the kids of the 90s.
Yeah, and
what
like
the
a
hell
hemp,
were they thinking?
And a hemp necklace and a pair of Airwalks.
I had many hemp necklaces.
So me too.
I adopted my cat in 2001. I named him Trey after Trey from the band Fish.
This is so embarrassing.
And had my girlfriend make him a hemp collar. So there's some factual information about my life and my past. Anyhow, Cordelia. This is, I think, the only time we see Cordelia in this episode. It's not a very Cordy heavy.
No, I think that's her only moment.
I think it's her only moment, but it is quite a moment.
She leaves an impression.
She does. She is defending Marie Antoinette.
Huh.
And what's really special is that she's very confused. She's very confused about Marie Antoinette and what Marie Antoinette was about. And Marie Antoinette is a complicated figure. We did some reading on Marie Antoinette.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot, you know, is it Marie Antoinette? Is it the patriarchy? Is it a combination of both? I can't believe you didn't shout the patriarchy.
The patriarchy! Sorry. I was just so entranced
by my speech.
Listening to you talk.
But the one thing we do know is that falsely, as it may be attributed to Marie Antoinette, this quote, let them eat cake, that Cordelia references by saying, I mean, she at least let them eat cake.
Oh, my God.
Is really underlining something here, which is, so the quote, let them eat cake, is attributed to, right, that poor people in France, it was told to Marie Antoinette, the poor people in France didn't have any bread. And she was like, well, why not let them eat brioche then? And like, first of all, what we read says that quote actually wasn't even really Marie Antoinette, blah, 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 blah.
Uh-huh,
but
uh-huh.
The context of it is that, like, you know, she's so tone deaf to the circumstances of people living in poverty that it doesn't occur to her that they don't have bread because they are poor. She just thinks, oh, well, if they don't have bread, then give them something else. Give them cake or brioche,
right,
or whatever, you know, in the translation it was.
Also, isn't brioche just bread?
No, brioche is delicious bread.
Well, yeah, but it's like of the bread family.
But it's fancy bread, which is, I think, where dichotomy is, right?
Fancy bread.
Like, oh, they don't have regular bread? Give them fancy bread. Yes. Like, it doesn't occur to, you know, Marie Antoinette or whoever in this quote that poverty, how poverty affects people. Just totally clueless. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that then Cordelia adding a layer to this cake. Ha, ha, ha.
Oh, my God.
Cordelia is misinterpreting that thing right on top of itself, thinking, but she gave them cake, is underlining some of Cordelia's, lack of awareness around the situation in France at the time, the situation in her life oftentimes.
Right.
What people do and do not have access to. And I think that is a really important Cordelia thing to just keep our eyes on because, you know, Cordelia, we love her for many reasons, but this moment is pointed.
Yeah. I wish we had time for you to read all those Wikipedia articles you read aloud to me in the kitchen.
Stay tuned for our side podcast. Kristen reads Wikipedia articles on Marie Antoinette. So anyway, Cordelia, thank you for your presence, but we are not giving you a jingle this week.
No.
We need you to brush up on your history.
Please.
Just a wee bit.
But also... Well, I don't really know enough about Marie Antoinette to really posit something, but I'm just wondering, like, Marie Antoinette was not the only person in power at that exact moment. She became queen when she married Louis the...
Yes.
And
I think 16th, which sounded
I thought you censored yourself saying.
Okay,
cool. why doesn't he get the flack? Well, is it because of the patriarchy?
Well, and that's the thing. That's the thing with Marie Antoinette is that, it seems like a lot of things point to her really being the scapegoat, if you will, for the French Revolution. That, you know, when Marie Antoinette was beheaded, it was much more about the symbolism that kind of processing, the spending that she would, you know, that she purportedly did and her lack of awareness and what have you, that she was really killed as a symbol of what was dying as a result of the French Revolution, which of course is tied into the patriarchy. Why not Louis the 16th? Why not a million other people who are participating in this? But...
Do you know what I think?
What do you think?
We are going to get so many long emails. And I'm really excited.
I know, because we like read two Wikipedia articles on Marie Antoinette. And
we're like, well, actually.
Yeah,
everyone's so like, please let us know your thoughts.
Yeah, please.
I'm sure there is at least one Marie Antoinette or French Revolution scholar
who listens
to this podcast.
Who's like, oh, brother.
And they've just been waiting for this episode.
They thought Cordelia was bad until we opened our mouths.
Yeah.
Anyhow. We have, speaking of problematic things, Xander has some moments here.
Oh, jeez. Ford shows up. Right.
That's the trigger.
What prompts it.
Mm-hmm. That's Xander's trigger. You know, we know by now that Xander loves Buffy, and any threat to his relationship to Buffy, which he knows he doesn't really have a shot at, but he just holds out this hope, is going to trigger him to typically... do some things that are kind of fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
And he does. He does. First of all, before Ford shows up, I don't even remember what they're talking about, but he's like, gives him a happy something.
Oh, he said when Angel does bad things
or something. So similar context. Yeah, when Angel does something bad, it gives Xander a happy. Now,
gross.
I don't know about you, but I would like to put out a ban on anyone saying that.
Gives me a happy.
No, thank you.
I was just cementing the example.
Right. We do get to see Xander dancing, which I'm...
Oh, God.
I hate it so much. I love it. Yeah. I really do. I really
it's
love
so
when
bad
Xander
good.
Dances. But then Xander makes this comment after Ford is there and Buffy is kind of all over Ford. It's a little weird.
Oh my God, instantaneous. It just feels like not her.
Yeah, because they're like immediately holding hands and she's like linking
arms. I had
arms
such
with
a crush
him.
On you. I moped over you for weeks.
Yeah,
we're laying it on really thick.
But I think perhaps some of the motivation for this is that she's just come off of seeing Angel.
Yeah.
And Drusilla. So she's like really
kind of make herself
acting
feel better.
Out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Because it doesn't seem like Buffy at all. Anyhow, Xander makes this comment when they walk away. Doesn't she know any fat guys? Which is super shitty, super fat shaming of Xander. And falls in line with some of the other stuff that we've called Xander out on and that we've called out more than just Xander on when it comes to being crappy to people who don't fit a particular mold that you have in your mind of who Buffy might be attracted to, or want to hold hands with or link elbows with. Xander.
Come on, man. Yeah. Should we have a Xander shame jingle?
Oh, no.
No. We have
Xander,
enough jingles. We have enough jingles. We have enough
Xander,
jingles.
Come on, man. Oh, man. Okay, well, we'll see what happens.
But also, there's that great moment where Buffy has revealed that she, while she was moping, she listened to the Divinyl song, yeah. I Touch Myself.
Yes.
And 45 to 60 seconds later, Willow has an awakening moment where she realizes, oh, that's what that song was about.
Yes.
Which is nice.
Which is nice. And this was very believable to me. I don't think that, like, I knew what masturbation was until I was in high school. Like, I didn't. You know what I mean? So this added up to me that, like, they would be like, oh, that's what that song meant. In fifth grade, you were like, you know, you thought it was, like, inappropriate and silly and kind of sexy, but you didn't really know what it meant. You thought, like, maybe they were, like, touching their skin and, like, dancing sexily.
Kristen has her hand pressed to her clavicles right now, just FYI. That's what's going on here. This is just making me think about, like, kissing your pillow.
Right.
And like that thing everybody would do where you wrap your arms all the way around you so it looks like somebody's hands are holding your back.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're making out with them.
Right. It was like what sex was when you were a kid, especially if you grew up in the 90s, but unfortunately still if you're growing up now, people don't really talk about sex or masturbation or bodies to young people. And so we're all just left kissing our pillows.
Aww.
And finding out later on in life that the songs we've been singing loudly and with passion have been actually meaning, when I think about you, I masturbate all the time.
Hooray! So Xander changed his outfit for the bronze. He's now wearing a brown shirt jacket with some contrast stitching, you may remember from the 90s and now, and like a white t-shirt and some like regular pants that aren't plaid. Better look.
And this is the Xander, the jealous Xander that I like. Like I'm super down with
a you're not wrong.
You're not wrong.
Like the you're not wrong refrain.
Yes. Like Xander and I think that underlines this point that like you can be jealous and have feelings and actually be hilarious.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Totally. You know, because this is a great moment for
him. Yeah, because Ford, of course, is like, you know, oh, he seems older. You're not wrong.
Cold hands.
You're not wrong. Yeah. Really, really good.
Also, this velvet shirt on Angel. We were wondering aloud, did he wear this like last week or the week before or something? Or am I just... Maybe he wears it in a later episode that we did a Buffy
that
watch
That we did
of.
The Buffy watch. Yeah, yeah, that's what I was thinking. That's what throws me off, actually, in remembering, did that happen already? Is that sometimes we've watched an episode forward and I'm like, oh.
But that deeply patterned crop circle velvet shirt.
You know.
Good gravy.
When I started dating my ex-girlfriend, there like probably a month or two into dating, she was like, can you help me clean out my closet? And I swear... I swear to you that she had, like, at least three of the Angel shirts.
Jen?
Yes.
Listen.
Jen called out.
Kristen's ex, Jen. My favorite person on the planet.
She liked her polyester. She liked her fancy, like, buttony shirts.
God.
She was really holding tight to that. But, So then Angel lies, right? This is when we get, I guess... Well, no, it's not our first lie. It's our second lie because Ford has lied
to
Buffy. Right.
Said he's matriculating.
And, yeah,
Lies.
But we get this moment between Angel and Buffy where she asks him what he was doing. And he says, I did nothing. I was just home reading. And she's like, oh, fuck. And I got like a pit in my stomach in this moment because I know that you know that feeling. I think most of us know that feeling of like
when you know somebody's lying to you.
Yes. It's a horrible feeling. Oh, my God. It just made me think of the Jinx. The worst of all.
Dear Lord.
Which I won't. If you haven't watched that, please go and watch it. It's upsetting, but it's necessary. OK, anyway. So this lie happens and she's like, I'm fucking out of here. She takes Ford. They go on a walk. You know, whatever. It's like, I know this is a major plot point, but I don't really care about it very much. She slays
a
vampire.
Well, I think it's important to
you
just mention, they're just taking a nice stroll down one of Sunnydale's premier creepy dark alleys in the warehouse district. And Buffy realizes she has to slay a vampire, so she tries to distract forward and asks him to go get her purse.
Run.
And then while she's slaying the vampire, and then Ford comes up and is like, what happened? And she's like, a cat. And another cat. Yeah. Great cover story.
Yeah, that's true. Buffy, that is really good.
This is Buffy lying.
Yeah,
Buffy. And doing a bang-up job.
And only to be topped soon by Willow, which we will get to.
Then Ford reveals that he knows she's the Slayer. They don't get into any details whatsoever about it. Why he knows what a Slayer is.
Yeah.
How he found out.
Yeah.
None of that, which
no, it's sort
seems
of just
odd.
Like, well, I was at your last school and I put the pieces together. It's like, what? Don't you know how this show works? Nobody puts the pieces together.
No.
It's not how it works. Anyhow,
So later in Willow's room.
Buffy and Willow are on the phone, and this brought me so much nostalgia. Buffy's phone especially. Buffy's like cordless white plastic phone
yes.
that she has like cradled between her shoulder and her ear. It gave me all of these flashbacks to my ear, my one ear being like bright
smashed.
Fucking red,
yeah.
So hot from having been on the phone for, you know, just hours upon hours upon hours with my friends. And then Willow.
Oh my God. Laying on her stomach on her bed with her fucking knees bent and her fucking elephant slipper feet.
Yeah. She's adorable.
Flapping in the breeze.
She's with this like ringer, long sleeve ringer t-shirt.
Ideal nightshirt.
So cute, Willow.
Great
so
job.
So cute. And then who comes to the door?
A rap, tap, tap, fucking Angel. Vampire vibes delivery service.
Theirs is a forbidden love.
Theirs is a forbidden love.
As Willow says later.
He needs her to track some stuff down on the net.
On the net.
He doesn't even know what he's looking for, but he's looking for something, anything weird. And it turns out there's weird stuff right away when Willow Googles.
No.
When Willow.
There was no Google.
When Willow
probably
web searches.
She probably asked Jeeves.
Oh my God. Willow looks online at the school records and sees that Ford is not listed anywhere.
Right. And and Willow, this is an important, but there's a lot of shit in this episode. This episode really contains a lot of important character moments.
Like Willow frantically hiding her bra.
Yes. Yes, like that.
I'm with you, Willow. That's my vibe.
That was a total Jenny move.
Yes.
God forbid a person of any gender were to see the undergarment.
Heavens.
Jenny Owen Yang does not wear undergarments.
No, I'm like a Barbie doll under here. It's just all plastic. Plastic and smooth.
But with
real life proportions, obviously, because Barbie is not real life proportions. Okay.
You good?
Sorry, I just didn't want anybody to
think.
Do you
want to whisper the patriarchy?
The patriarchy.
But Angel and Willow have this exchange where Willow is like, I'll look for you, but I have something to say. And Angel, being 241, is like, I know. You think I might be jealous and like, I get it, but I'm not. And this is why I'm not. But he has this little monologue where he talks about the fact that he historically has not been a very jealous person, that for the last 100 years, he really just moped around feeling very guilty.
Woo, feel that.
Yeah, he really honed his brooding skills. Oh, you don't feel that as
I don't
much?
Feel that. I just feel like feeling guilty. Not being jealous.
Right. And then to end this scene, you know, Willow's mom is like, Willow or whatever. And she says,
like a Kathy cartoon come to life.
Ack. She says the word ack. And I fucking love you, Allison Hannigan, for your ability to deliver ack via Willow. I mean, this is Willow, right?
Yeah.
She's one of the only people who can say ack out loud. And you're like, yep.
Yes.
That's believable.
Yes, exactly.
That's 100% believable. Also, we skipped over.
Oh my God, the Sunset Club?
Yeah, the Sunset. Also, the name.
The
Sunset Club, you guys.
Yeah, it does sound. Well, it sounds really like LA or something.
It sounds like Midnight at the Oasis.
Where's the Oasis? Las Vegas?
I don't know. It
just exists in
a song. If you told me that we were going to go on a date to the Sunset Club,
You'd be like. Do I need to help you clean all the polyester and velvet shirts
out
of your closet?
I'd be really excited for the umbrellas that were going to be in my cocktails, you know?
Yeah.
Today's episode is brought to you by Regal Cinemas. If you're anything like me, you deeply enjoy going to the movies. Going to the movies is probably among my top three all-time activities. I love seeing films on the big screen. I also love being around other people who are watching the same movie with me at the same time. And of course, I love eating giant buckets of popcorn. If you feel the same and you like going to the theater, Regal Unlimited is something that just makes sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two movie visits. You can see any standard 2D movie anytime, no blackout dates, no restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in 4DX or IMAX or RPX or ScreenX, there's so many ways to watch movies these days, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And with Regal Unlimited, you don't only save money on the tickets, you will also save on your snacks. And as previously mentioned, I love snacks. The only thing that can make me love a snack more is saving money on buying a snack. Members get 10% off of all non-alcoholic concession items with membership. Regal Unlimited, all you can watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two visits. So if you're planning to see two movies this month, join Regal Unlimited and sign up now. You can sign up in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. Sign up for Regal Unlimited using code BUFFERING and earn 10% off your three-month subscription. Please let us know about all of the movies you see and how the popcorn is.
Hello, my name is Alison Larkin, and I'm a writer, comedian, and narrator and host of the Jane Austen podcast. This podcast brings Jane Austen's stories to the 21st century, along with commentary from me and conversations with fascinating people who all share a love of Jane Austen. And of course, we had to start with none other than Pride and Prejudice. So join me as we embark on a journey through some of the most wonderful stories I know. The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Just want to mention that while Ford is talking to Diego, he takes a pill that he says is Ritalin.
Yes.
Which we later, I think, can safely assume is not Ritalin.
Yeah.
But some kind of medication, some kind of anti-nausea or brain cancer-related medication.
Mm-hmm. But also an interesting cover, right, that you're saying Ritalin. And I think another 90s, you know, like, this is a very 90s thing.
Yeah.
First of all, today it would probably be Adderall. And second of all, I don't know the history of Ritalin and Adderall and ADD, but I do know growing up in the 90s that, like, that was a big fucking topic of conversation. It was like, it had to be a boom of sorts of when, you know, kids were just being diagnosed all over the place with ADD. So just a little 90s nugget.
Nice. We also see that Ford mouth lip syncing.
Yeah.
This vampire movie, which we did some quick research on.
Very Home Alone, right? Very like,
yeah.
You filthy animal.
Yes, like, yes, it's totally exactly, that scene. Exactly.
But with Dracula?
Yeah, so this is, depending on your source, it's either a 1973 or 1974 British television movie, Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like it's been more recently rebranded as Dan Curtis's Dracula, because Dan Curtis directed it. And then in 1992, of course, the Bram Stoker's Dracula that Winona Ryder is in came out. So I think to separate it from that, they've rebranded it as Dan Curtis's. Just like quick note, this film was written by Richard Matheson, who wrote I Am Legend, which of course the Will Smith zombie movie was based on, and directed by Dark Shadows creator Dan Curtis. That's who Dan Curtis is. He created Dark Shadows, which I have very specific, like, 3-year-old memories of seeing Dark Shadows. Like, I think my mom was watching
like
it.
Like, you were just 3?
Yeah, like,
wow.
Not like I was watching a whole episode or anything, but, right, like, I remember, you know, seeing clips of it, seeing the opening credits or whatever.
Yeah.
And,
cool.
Just vampire vibes.
All these connections. Also, a connection that I didn't mention is that Ford is played by Jason Baer. A few years later, I guess 7-8 years later, we'll see Jason Baer and Sarah Michelle Gellar together in the movie The Grudge. which came out in 2004.
Wow, I saw The Grudge in theaters.
Yeah, I think I did too. Although I feel like I'm confusing The Grudge with that movie that where they were on the roller coaster and he like carved...
Final Destination?
No. It's the one where the guy like writes in his chest Nicole for Eva. It's Nicole and then the number 4 and then Eva. Come on, it's a classic.
I got nothing.
Oh, maybe it's The Crush.
The Crush, The Grudge.
Oh, I'll find out. I'll find out and get back to you.
Post-production, fact correction. Post-production, fact correction.
I was mistaken, dear listeners. The movie with the roller coaster and Nicole for Eva is the movie Fear, which was released in 1996 and stars Mark Wahlberg and Reese Witherspoon, not to be confused with 1993's movie The Crush, which stars Alicia Silverstone. You can see how I might have gotten them confused. There's sexy stuff, there's dangerous stuff, there's obsession. It's the 90s. How can you know? But now you know.
Thank you.
Anyhow, now we get to
the best thing ever.
Yeah, I think it's my favorite scene with Willow lying. I love it so much that I recorded the audio so that we can all experience it together. Here we go.
What's up? Nothing. Do you want to hang? We're cafeteria bound.
I'm going to do work in the computer lab on schoolwork that I have, so I cannot hang just now. Hi, Ford.
Morning.
Okay, well, fess up.
What?
Are you drinking coffee again? Because we've talked about this.
It makes me jumpy. I have to go away.
Oh my God, Willow.
This is the best.
Oh, that laugh. It's incredible. She has one of my favorite awkward laughs of all time. There was an episode in season one where she does this awkward laugh as well. That I remember. It's like when her and Xander have their inside joke and Buffy isn't a part of it. And like she's just hysterically laughing. Oh, yeah. It's just great. It's just great.
Also, a treasure that you can't hear in the recording is what she's doing with her arms and hands that are like sort of clasped in this like sort of circle. And she's like kind of nervously like gripping her own hands, but also kind of like twisting her shoulders so that she's standing like kind of like a triumphant like Revolutionary War statue or something.
Incredible acting.
Really
incredible.
Good.
Incredible acting by Allison Hannigan with the sly. And then this is the moment where Giles comes in and is like, but Buffy, he's panicked because he might be taking a night off to have a good time with a woman that he likes.
But don't worry, she has a beeper thing. Here's the number.
Here's the number. And he has, if you want to know what it's like to have a conversation with my wife, pay attention to the moment when Buffy says, go have fun. And Giles has like at least 3 seconds before the scene ends where he looks at Buffy and then he looks away. And then he looks at Buffy and he thinks. And then he looks away and he thinks. And then he looks back at Buffy and then he walks out the door. I was like, that if that is not you. I mean, it's Jenny. That's the Jenny way. The Jenny way is the Giles way.
Wow.
A lot of
so much me in this episode.
Yeah. I see a lot of you in a lot of these characters. Then fucking Ford and Buffy on their date or whatever
it is.
This is just, first of all, Ford starts off by saying, is that more vampires? Are those more vampires, Ford? Maybe you should talk better. And for seconds, he has a fucking steak with him. I hate this guy.
Yeah.
I don't like him. I don't like him one bit. I don't like what he's about. Then he fucking lies.
He presumes too much.
He lies. He corners this vampire and says, give me the information. Now, here's where I need to stop us. Because what the fuck is with Ford? Like, who are his parents? What do they think? Has he run away? They have a sick kid, right?
Mm.
They have a sick kid who has left Los Angeles and is just gone and missing. And I'm gonna follow the arc all the way through here. He has found a bomb shelter to build a thing in. I'm assuming that Diego has funded it because Diego seems very huffy and is like, the lease is up on this place, man. What are we gonna do after that? So like, I don't know, but I don't. The mechanics or the like. The backstory on Ford is really shaky for me. Where is he getting the funding and where is he getting the information? How the fuck does he know about Spike and that he needs to know how to get Spike? It took the Scoobies this whole time to find that what Spike just got. Come on. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't understand how this kid is so strong and how this kid is so knowledgeable and how this kid has just run away from home and no one is looking for him.
Yeah.
I just don't know. And then whatever. And I'm taking us to the end, and we'll talk about this in a more serious way. But, like, then he dies and is buried in Sunnydale? Why don't...
Right.
Come on, you guys.
Where are his parents?
Where are his where's his family or anyone that he knew in his past life?
Yeah.
Anyway,
mysteries abound.
That's my issue with Ford, the character.
Okay, then we have Xander, Angel, and Willow together.
Ah, the dream team.
So good.
And this is really the first time we're seeing them. I mean, you know, we've seen Angel and Xander have their thing.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Lots of sexual attention awards have gone in their direction.
Praise.
But Willow has not really had a standalone relationship with Angel, and certainly them as a trio. Like, this is new territory for them.
Yeah. And it's great. And Xander and Angel have this wonderful old married couple moment where Xander calls Angel dead boy, and Angel says, "Could you not call me that?" So huffy.
Yeah.
The best.
So mad. So mad.
Xander and Willow not dressed for the Sunset Club.
No, they're not. And that's how Chanterelle.
Yes, Chanterelle.
Chanterelle spots them immediately and says, "Oh, you're new. I can tell you're new. Don't be ashamed." She's so sweet.
She's so nice. Even when Angel is like, "You're a fool."
Right.
She's like, "Have an open mind. I'm really sweet."
But you know, this is a triggering thing for me. This is really, like, this moment to me reminded me a lot of conversations that, like, I've had with my extended family members about things like, you know, abortion rights and so on and so forth, where, like, and this election, where, you know, they've been so nice, but also, you know, because the setup is Angel is really mean and she is really nice. So you kind of, like, feel for her.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth of the matter is that Angel holds the knowledge that she's about to, she's going to fucking get killed.
Yeah.
She has no idea what she's talking about.
He's in touch with reality and she's not.
Exactly. And she has this line that I wrote down. "You don't have to be so cruel about it. Other viewpoints than your own could be valid, you know." And it's a trigger for me because this is what everybody has fucking told me on the other side of the line for the last however many months. Hey, I agree to disagree. And it's like, no, you're putting me at risk. You're putting yourselves at risk. What is the tweet that you loved so much that's like
about, oh my God.
Yeah. Can you say what it is?
Oh, well, something to the effect of, "I never thought jaguars would eat my face,"
with the
quote attributed to a woman who voted for Jaguars Eating People's Faces Party 2017.
Right, right. You're like, I see that I'm in danger. I see that you could even be in danger. I'm trying to fucking protect you here. Don't give me this shit about you. You're so, it's just a different viewpoint. Don't be so cruel. Like, there are reasons I think that, whatever. I won't lose it over it, but it was really, I was like, wow, this is really capturing something here, because she's totally clueless. She has no idea what she's talking about, but she believes so deep, like she believes so completely in it.
In the lonely ones.
And it's devastating to see the moment when she realizes that she was wrong.
Uh-huh.
It really is so sad when she sees Spike and she recognizes instantly that everything she thought was true is not true.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, not to go off on too much of a rant there, but it was a very poignant moment for me. And yeah, the lonely ones.
Immediately followed by this fantastic moment where Angel's going off. He's like, "I've seen enough."
Right.
I know this kind of people. They've made up these, like, fantasy stories about how vampires are friendly. They don't know anything about how vampires, like, really are, or what they do, or how they dress.
Yeah.
And as he says how they dress, a guy who has just descended the stairs wearing the exact same outfit as Angel.
So good.
Sort of, like, passes between him and one of the Scoobies.
Xander gets a big kick out of it. It's a really good moment.
It's really great.
And you know, something that I think must happen in the next scene is really important, which is that we know Drusilla. We've known Drusilla for a few episodes
now. Yeah, yeah.
But this is the first episode where Buffy and the Scooby Gang in general learns about Drusilla and about the fact that Drusilla is alive.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Giles had thought her dead based on, you know, the mythology and the whatever, his books.
Right. Angry Mob in Prague.
Angry Mob in Prague. So I think that's a big deal. And Buffy sees this photo. Beautiful daguerreotype. What is that called?
Wow.
Right? Isn't that? I don't know. It's one of those moments
I think
where, like,
I think it's Daguerreotype?
Yeah, I think
daguerreotype sounds like it's a bad picture.
Right.
A picture that's not representative of the person who is in it. Anyway.
She looks great.
It's a nice photo. And we learn, and I'm skipping a little ahead here, but I think it fits with this. We learn Drusilla's backstory and as it relates to Angel.
Yes.
This is a big fucking deal.
Yeah.
BFD, guys. Angel confesses, or whatever you want to call it, to Buffy that he was, you know, he was really obsessed with Drusilla, her purity, her chasteness. And that not only did he sire her, but he drove her insane by killing everyone that she loved, sending her literally to a nunnery. And then on the day that she was supposed to become a nun, turned her into a demon.
Yeah.
So this is important, and this and it's important for a lot of reasons, and it will continue to be important. But I think it's clarifying if you're just watching now in terms of, like, why Angel would let Drusilla live in that moment on
right,
the playground.
Right. Guilt, guilt, guilt.
So much guilt. Like, he knows that vampires are bad, but also he knows the reason that Drusilla is crazy and a vampire is all because of his actions.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one of these moments, and we'll talk about this more as we get towards the end of the episode, but one of these things where, how do you know what is good and what is bad? Things are fucking complicated. Mm-hmm. Drusilla is not just evil. Drusilla had a life. She had everyone that she loved taken away from her. It's complicated.
Yeah.
It's really complicated.
You know what else is complicated?
What else?
The back door of the Summers house is always cracked.
It is.
It's always
open.
Listen, I live in Southern California, and everyone's like, oh, there's no bugs compared to the East Coast. Whatever. There's not, like, a never-ending cloud of mosquitoes that you have to, like, wade through, say, in the summer.
Right.
But if we leave the door of our house open,
one loud fly always gets in.
Immediately. So I'm not buying the Summers house leaving the door cracked, especially when it's dark outside.
Especially with that
it's
fruit
light
bowl.
Inside. And the fruit bowl.
Can we talk about the fruit bowl for
one
just a hot second?
It's like the
half of
a fruit arc.
Yeah. It's like, they were like, what should we put? The like set designer was like, we need a fruit bowl. Should it be bananas, apples, pears, kiwis? And they were like, put one of everything. Just go for it. Also, let us not forget that in the library scene, it is revealed what Giles has been doing with his time this evening with Jenny Calendar. He has been at a fucking monster truck rally.
Hell yeah.
Whoever you are, if it was you, Joss, I give you all the credit. If it was another writer in the room, whoever it was who was like, I know.
That's exactly what Jenny Calendar wants to do in her spare time.
And it's exactly where every single person who watches this show wants to imagine Giles. You know? It's just great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so if it's okay, we'll go back to the library for a second.
Yeah, yes.
Right? Because Giles is, right, monster trucks, Drusilla, we see the picture. But then this vampire, who Ford has said he has killed, runs through the library, steals a book, and runs out the library. But by the way, the library has so many ways to get in and out.
Yeah.
They should work on that. You know, they know what they're up against. Don't you think?
Yeah, narrow down the ins and outs.
Yeah. But Giles is incensed. He's so, my book. They took one of my books. It's just,
he's so bummed. And I get that.
It's so good. Yeah. So I get it too. And you
also
know,
Jenny Calendar's reaction shot to the vampire. Oh, so dramatic.
So dramatic. Speaking of dramatic, I believe we then go to Spike's lair, or whatever we're calling it. Drusilla is talking to this bird. If I hadn't already given her the jingle earlier, we'd give it to her again right now, because she just wants the bird to live. Why is the bird not talking to her? Why is the bird not standing up on its two little bird feet? She doesn't get it. And Spike has this moment with her that is, oh God, I love their love. I love their, you know what, then let's, maybe we should stop and do a sexual tension award while I'm talking about loving their love.
Is it a three-way sexual tension award between Drusilla, Spike, and the bird?
Well, I don't know. I think for it to be a three-way, the passion has to be felt in a triangulated way.
I can confirm that that is not necessary.
for what are you confirming?
Nothing. Gotta go.
All right, well, if you're not going to give us the reasoning, I'll just have to believe you.
I just feel like
there could be three people, and in order for them to all earn a sexual attention award together, they don't necessarily need to feel the attraction in equal measure in all directions.
Okay, and actually, maybe it adds to the sexual attention award that Spike feels a deep disdain towards the bird.
Right, right. Twisted.
Yeah, very twisted. Very Spike and Drusilla. All right, Jenny. since you've revealed some personal aspects of your life to get us here to this sexual attention award, I'll give it to you and to Spike, the bird, and Drusilla.
Then we've got this ridiculously bright, sunshiny school campus shot where Buffy's like, whoop, and Ford's like, doosh, doosh, doosh.
Yeah.
And he's like, Buffy, got any plans tonight? And she's like, none that I know of. And he's like, meet me.
And
she's
the
like,
camera, when? The camera's spinning around.
Just like, relax.
It's a very, and I don't even know if this is accurate, but it reminded me of I Know What You Did Last Summer, right? Which has just happened.
It just reminded me of like any, like Scream, like any teen horror.
But
like
that spinny camera move, because you know what's incredible about camera angles and, you know, cinematography in general is that if they had acted this scene and the lighting had been different and the cameras had been different, it would not have had that feeling at all. Like they really, the way they deliver the lines to each other is pretty monotone, but you know, there's not a lot of like creepiness inherent in the way they're talking to each other. It's much more communicated by the camera spinning and the lighting being very severe and the music. Exactly.
Yeah.
But so yes, they set a time to meet. It's like a showdown, you know, see you here at 9, except they're pretending it's date 2.
But instead, Buffy goes to the Sunset Club around 6:25 p.m. And then the sun sets at around 6:27 p.m. Perfect timing.
She should really think about these things. Like, you know, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
I know she's got a lot on her mind, but like she knows that she operates, you know, she has a particular, I guess she has school, though. School really cuts into it when she could be doing a lot of this work safely because the vampires can't come out. Something we skipped over because we talked about Drusilla's backstory as a separate thing is this moment between Angel and Buffy. This is like a really good underline to the complicated nature of their relationship because they don't get to have, you know, the moment that many of us have in our relationships where we say, I love you for the first time. And it's simple. I mean, it's never simple, but at least it's usually just rooted in being in love. And this is not that. Angel says, do you love me?
And because I have to tell you something. Because I have terrible.
Right. And Buffy says, I love you. I don't know if I trust you. So this is
and
like,
he's like, maybe you shouldn't do either.
Wow. Loaded. It's loaded. Yeah. It's a hefty moment, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a big moment. I mean, I think saying everyone knows, I think, that saying I love you to someone for the first time is a pretty loaded moment. I do you remember when I said I loved
up, up, up,
do you remember?
Up,
do you remember?
Up, up,
do you remember?
Up, 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 up. Moving right
That's
along.
That's how it went, too. That was how the
Kristen was like, I love you. And I was like, oh,
no, that's not true. She said, I love you back.
Okay.
And it was in London.
Oh, my God.
And it was
enough.
Right.
Enough, woman.
You're
this
all
is nobody's business.
You're all welcome. This was so much fun for me, and I think so much fun for you at home.
That's why you wanted to include this.
No, I didn't even think of
the episode.
I didn't think of it until right now.
Oh, I felt it coming from a mile away. It was like, how long is it going to take her to get around?
And it's great because you can't go anywhere. You got headphones on. You're wired to the spot.
I hate you.
You're stuck. It's great. I have a lot of power in this podcasting world of ours.
Anyway.
Oh, the other thing that I wanted to say about this scene, which I think is important in a set kind of way, is the scene between Buffy and Angel ends with this shot from outside the house through a curtain, and they're sitting at the dining room table.
Beautiful.
It's a beautiful shot, and it may be one of – it's either the first time or one of the first times that we've seen the dining room table from outside in this way, and that – spot in Buffy's house is a very important spot. It's a very powerful spot, at least in my one time through the season. That's like a very meaningful place. And so, you know, I just think establishing.
Yeah.
So on and so forth. So anyhow, they say they love each other. No one in this room knows what that is like because we have never said that to each other.
Ugh.
And then, you know, another chapter of lies, is sort of, you know, sort of resolved, not really resolved though. Like Buffy comes into school and Willow and Xander are like, Right.
Hey, Buffy.
Hey. Did Angel talk to you? And you can see that Buffy is visibly upset. I mean,
yeah.
But and in the exchange, honestly, between Angel and Buffy too, she's sort of like, this is a conspiracy. Like, what is going on? And mm-hmm. that feeling, like, I've been there before where you like find
all your friends are talking about something
yes,
about you
and
without you
don't know. Mm-hmm. That's a cutting thing. It really is. It goes deep. And I don't think I ever had the experience of that happening when it was also surrounding somebody who I was in love with, where like somebody I was in love with and my friends all on a particular page and had intentionally kept me out for better or for worse. Mm-hmm. It's hard. And then Buffy gets locked in the dungeon.
Locked in the dungeon. She's all like, you're all about to be the all-you-can-eat moron bar. You don't know anything about vampires. Then Ford's like, I have a nest of tumors liquefying my brain. A phrase that has stuck with me since the first time I heard it.
Yeah, which is why I laugh. I was not laughing at Ford's tumors. I was laughing at who I'm married to. And that, the exact phrasing of that line.
Yeah.
So there's a big plot twist here where, again, where what is bad and what is not bad. Certainly wanting to, and this is like taking a line from Buffy, but mass murder in exchange for your own life is never justifiable. Mm-hmm. But it does add a layer of complexity to what Ford is doing here. Ford's not just after this for fun. Ford knows that he has not very long to live. And so, you know, it's hard. It's hard to view the character of Ford now as only bad.
Right.
Right. Also, there's an interesting exchange between Ford and Buffy where she says, you know, he's like, I'm going to become a vampire. I'm going to become one of them. And she says, you know, that isn't what happens. You die and a demon takes up a place in your body and remembers your life, but it is not you. Mm-hmm. And that's important. That's I think, a piece of, I don't know if you want to call it like the mythology or whatever, but, you know, I just think it's important for us to remember like the way that vampires are portrayed in this series
as
a whole, that like they're, when they are a vampire, they are not the person they were.
Unless they've been re-ensouled by
a curse. They've been re-ensouled, of course. Also, so Spike gets there. Spike arrives, and I always love a Spike arrival. It's always done with lots of fanfare. And the particular breed of fanfare we get in this episode is that he walks in, he looks at Chanterell, and grabs her choker and rips it off of her body and throws it on the floor for no reason.
Yeah, that's...
Well, no, actually, I'm sorry. I just realized that the reason is, of course, that he has to feed off of her.
Yeah, but, like, it wasn't like the choker was taking up her whole neck. It was thick, but it wasn't
right.
that thick.
His teeth would probably...
I get but it, like, but, like, oh, boy.
We watched Planet Earth the other day, and we watched a tiger eating part of a deer or something, and the tiger kept getting, like, the fur in its mouth. So I picture Spike doesn't want that kind of humiliation, you know?
Having
a choker stuck to his tooth.
Yeah.
It's just it's a little
so
too much. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and then we see this moment where, you know, Chanterelle realizes, oh, fuck, I've been wrong. They all realize, oh, fuck.
Yeah, and then every vampire is attacking every person.
Yeah, one per body.
And Buffy's like looking around like, oh, fuck. And then she sees up on the balcony one lone vampire.
Not smart, Spike.
Yeah, that's
a big gap in Spike's plan.
Yeah, but it just seemed like foolproof, I guess, right? And like there were so many of them.
Right. But it wasn't like, you know, when you play football and you're like, okay, we're going to do this and then we're going to do that and then we're going to, they didn't have
not
a plan.
Looking ahead, right.
Yeah,
right.
they didn't get enough steps ahead of themselves. Also, perhaps he thought that Drusilla would be okay up on the balcony and didn't realize that Buffy could fly.
Yeah, Buffy can jump 20 feet up in the air.
Sheesh, that jump.
Yeah, well, you'll remember in The Harvest, maybe, when Buffy's leaving campus and Principal Flutie's like, leaving campus? And she's like, oh, no, never. And he locks the gate and then she jumps straight up over.
Also, yes, I remember that. And I also remember the episode where we see Angel for the first time when Buffy jumps up.
Oh, yeah.
Up, all the way up to that pole and above their heads.
Does a handstand, on a pole.
So
right.
Buffy's powerful. And of course, Buffy has Drusilla, and so nothing matters, you know? And that, I know.
I love it.
Oh, I love it, too. I have, in all caps, Spike loves Drew, just written in my notebook. Because it's just amazing. You know, I mean, Spike has goals in life. He wants to kill the Slayer. It's really important to him. But nothing comes close to his feelings towards Drusilla. And so Drusilla is in danger. He's like, everybody get the fuck off and get the fuck out. Like, just stop what you're doing. And Buffy, I think, knowing that she is outnumbered, makes the decision to make this move where she gets everyone, almost everyone, out to safety, throws Drusilla at Spike, which is also interesting.
Interesting that she doesn't just dust Drusilla.
Dust Drusilla, leave and close the door, right?
I think, you know what I think? Wait, I was thinking about this. I think it was like, if she dusted Drusilla, she would have lost the time she'd need to get out the door and close it.
I thought maybe it had something to do, because, you know, Spike and Buffy are establishing a relationship. And I did feel that maybe it had to do with the fact that she said, if you do this thing for me, I will do this thing for you. And if she had dusted Drusilla, it would have broken all manner of, like, trust between them, which sounds weird.
But she didn't lie.
Oh, snap.
She did not lie.
And so she gets out, but she leaves Ford behind.
So this is like the first time.
Yeah. I mean, it's the first time that Buffy has some influence in a human being dying.
Well, there are people she hasn't been able to save.
Right, but this was the first time that it's very clear that she made the decision to leave him in there. And it's, again, here's another one of these fucking moments that's super layered, because he says, Ford says in the Sunset Club, I'm not going to die, you know, having lost my hair, having lost my strength, having, I don't want that, you know? So there is an element of, like, assisted, it's not assisted suicide, but it's assisted death here. For him, and but it's there's just a lot. There's a lot of pieces, but it is the first time that she has a direct hand in a human being dying that is not just by her not saving them.
And that raises, like, some kind of morality question.
Of course. I mean, gosh, if you want to talk about morality debates, there's a huge morality debate around assisted suicide and people being able to or not being able to have the ownership of their own person to say, I would like to die now, when they're super ill or suffering or what have you. So, you know, not to put too much on this, but this is a big moment, and it's given that space in the episode. There's a lot of weight on the moment when Buffy says, we have to come back, and they all say, why? And she says, for the body. Or did she say for the body? Yeah, with a little scratch on her head. It's like, it's real stuff. And this episode ends with, you know, it's sort of like the episode ends with a scene that describes everything we've been seeing in the entire episode and in the entire series. It's a really pivotal moment when Ford, unbeknownst to us as to why he is being buried in the Sunnydale cemetery, but
I wonder if Buffy went back for the body, buried him in the cemetery because in order for a vampire to change, they have to be buried in consecrated dirt. I have no idea. And then waited so that he wouldn't be shipped home to his parents and become a vampire living in L.A.
Right. That makes sense. But now he's dust. So how are they going to explain that? Whatever.
Difficult to say.
One day they'll make the series behind the scenes and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. But this exchange between Giles and Buffy, it has to be one of the more meaningful exchanges in the series, right? It underlines everything that is to come and that has even gone past in the series, that nothing, that things are hard, that high school is fucking hard, this time in your life when you're learning that it's not just good or bad, it's not just, you know, A or B, that things are really complicated. And Buffy is saying these words, you know, I can't tell anymore. I can't tell what's good and what's bad anymore. Things are getting more confusing. And she asks Giles, Does it ever get easy? Right? And then Giles is like, what do you want me to say to that? And she says, lie to me. And he says, it's very simple. Yes. The villains are always, you know, wearing like capes and, you know, I'm not, he doesn't say that, but, you know, he.
How dare you?
Oh.
How dare you cast?
Oh, capes?
Yes, in such an unflattering light.
Sorry, Jenny. But, you know, this is beautiful. It's really beautiful. And we're going to see so much of this as the series continues, of how do you tell what's good and how do you tell what's not good? And this is what we live in our day-to-day lives.
It's just really beautiful. We're seeing all of these relationships that we've seen, like, built and developed. This network has expanded, and the ropes that bind individuals to one another have thickened.
Mm-hmm.
And now that that foundation is established, we begin to have reasons to call into question, what is this relationship and what does that relationship mean? And,
right.
and what, you know, what does it mean when this person lies
yeah.
to that person?
Yeah, it's no longer there's a slayer and there's a vampire and it's very clear what needs to happen.
Yeah.
That has been tossed to the side and now we are in relationships where we don't know. We don't know what we want even, right? Because the big bad right now is Spike and Drusilla, and I don't know how you all are feeling, but I surely do not want them to go away.
No, I want them to stay forever.
I want them to stay forever too, and that's hard. We're saying we love Spike and Drusilla's love, but their love is rooted in killing people.
Yes, yes.
It's complicated. Hard. It's very hard.
Does it ever get easier, Kristen?
What do you want me to say to you, Jenny?
Lie to me.
Yes, Jenny, it gets easier. Decisions become clear.
Oh.
You can tell who's good and who's bad.
Thank you.
And you'll be fine.
Hooray.
Sky's clear.
Sure is.
What a journey we have to go on together.
Can't wait for the rest of it. Thank you so much for listening. I am Jenny Owen Youngs, and when I'm not watching Buffy and making this podcast, I write songs and record them. You could hear some of them at jennyowenyoungs.com/buffering. And you can give me a shout on Twitter at Jenny Owen Youngs.
And I'm Kristen Russo. And when I'm not watching Buffy, I am helping LGBTQ young people and their families with my work at everyoneisgay.com and mykidisgay.com. If you'd like to know what's on my brain at all hours of the day, you can follow me on Twitter at Kristen Noeline, KristinNoeline.
As we mentioned at the top of the show, we have two upcoming online buffering events. You can get all the info about our upcoming events as a duo or any upcoming events that we have individually by visiting bufferingthevampireslayer.com and clicking on events. Follow us on Twitter at BufferingCast or drop us an email at bufferingthevampireslayer@gmail.com.
If you like what we do, there are three really great ways that you can support us. The first being that you can become a patron of ours over at patreon.com/bufferingcast. You can become a $1, $5, or $10 a month patron. And there are super fun rewards for all of those levels. This week, our $10 patrons got a bonus mailbag episode. Our $5 patrons every week get the MP3 file of the song that we have recorded. And our $1 patrons this week got the spoiler delivered to them, $1 or more, everyone on Patreon got to finally find out what Jenny spoiled during the live taping of Reptile Boy. So it's a very fun place to be if you can join us over there. If you don't have the funds to support us, that is totally cool. You can go on over to iTunes and leave us a review, especially if you like it. And last but certainly not least, we have a store, which you can find by going to our website, bufferingthevampireslayer.com, and clicking on store. We have t-shirts, we have enamel pins, we have all manner of fun things, and you can go on over there and deck yourselves out to your Buffy heart is content.
Deck yourselves out. Good gravy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that about does it for us. Thank you so much for listening. Till next time.
You've known her for a century. I'll ask and you'll reply. Where were you last night? You lied to me. You lied to me. You don't see kind, yet I know you went behind my back. I can't believe, never thought you'd do this to me. The reasons that you say don't take away the pain. said to me. Now things get less clear. Thought I understood what was happening here, but the lies pile up so high. Can't dig down to you, though I try to trust you with my heart. Will it always be so hard? Please lie to me. Lie to me.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.